Hi, everybody. My name is Carl Darden, and I'd like to welcome and thank all of you for joining us today here on Navy Sports Central. I am your host, and this is the official podcast of the Navy Sports Nation, where we take a deeper dive into Navy sports. In this episode, we're going to break down this year's Army-Navy game from beginning to end, starting with the pregame buildup and going all the way through to the final play. And I'm telling you right now that after last year's disappointing loss, you have no idea how much I'm going to enjoy this. So stick around. We'll be right back. Okay, here we go with this special Army-Navy edition of Navy Sports Central. And I say special edition because I normally release an episode every couple of weeks. And obviously Saturday's game fell between episodes since I just put one out last week. And the next one isn't scheduled until right before Christmas, I think I'm going to put it out. So anyway, I wanted to get this one out there because waiting another 7 or 8 days to talk about the game would have just been way too long. So here we go. Like I said, we'll pretty much cover everything having to do with the game. And one place I always like to start is with the teaser that CBS Sports puts together to promote the game. And that's what they usually kick off the telecast with. Over the years, I've really come to enjoy how they produce that piece. And so I'll have a few words about that. Then when we think about a lot of the pregame discussion around both teams, last Tuesday, I made a few observations in a post on the Navy Sports Nation group Facebook page. So we'll revisit those and we'll see how close I came to some of the things I was looking for versus what we actually saw in the game. Then we're going to get into the game itself. I can tell you from my perspective, my biggest concern was whether or not the mids could play with poise when it mattered the most. And clearly we saw that they were able to do that. I mean, it wasn't perfect. They made a few mistakes here and there, but nothing that really cost them. So we'll talk about some of the big plays that made a difference in the game, but more specifically, we'll get into why those plays worked in the first place. I spend a lot of time when I'm watching these games focusing on players who don't actually have the ball in their hands, because many times they're the ones responsible for making a huge play to spring the ball carrier that either keeps the drive alive or ends up leading directly to a score. Okay, I've set things up enough, so let's get started. As I mentioned, one of the things I really like to do when these games come up is check out the pregame teaser that CBS Sports puts together. And I just continue to be impressed with the quality of these pieces. They're only 3 to 4 minutes long, but they are so inspiring. And, you know, I've had my favorites over the years, and I'll tell you which specific one is still at the top of my list. But this year's edition was really good. It's always cool for me to hear the perspective from former players. And you saw Napoleon McCallum's reaction when he started sharing his thoughts. That was pretty moving. And, you know, other guys like Frank Schenk, I've actually had a chance to speak with him a couple of years ago when I was out there at our reunion. Frank, you may recall, was the guy who kicked the game-winning field goal in the 1989 game against Army. That was also an upset, by the way. And I had a nice conversation with him about what it was like, you know, what was going through his mind when he was getting ready for that kick. I do believe that they iced him a couple of times. And, you know, the other thing to remember, too, is Frank wasn't a senior at the time. He was, I believe, a junior because I'm pretty sure he was class of 91. So, yeah, that would have made him a junior when that game was played. So, again, it's great to get the perspective of the players who had actually lived that game. And it is so awesome to see the emotion that is still evident on their faces when they talk about that experience. And then you put that together with the narration and the music, and it just really turns out to be an impressive and an inspirational piece. So that was this year's version. Now, I did say I was going to share with you my favorite teaser from the last several years, and without a doubt, that is the one that came from the 2019 game 2 years ago. I'm going to go ahead and put a link to it in the show notes, but it was just a short 3-minute piece, and it featured a speech that John F. Kennedy made when he was addressing the class of 1961 at their graduation ceremony. And you also heard from some of the players who figured to have a big role in that game on the Navy side, you know, Malcolm Perry and Ford Higgins, as well as some of the outstanding players from Army's team. But I think what makes this particular teaser my favorite is that combination of the music and Kennedy's really powerful words. The two together just make for a great combination. And I've probably watched that teaser, I would say, dozens of times in the last 2 years. And every time it gets a reaction out of me because those words are so strong, the music is so compelling, and then when you listen to the perspective from the players, you can tell it just means absolutely everything to them. So, you know, those are just a couple of my thoughts on the pregame teaser that CBS Sports puts together. And just like the uniforms, though, I will tell you that the ones that are disqualified from ranking among my favorites are the ones that precede a game where Navy has lost. So I'm not even going to comment on last year's teaser at all, nor from the ones from 2016, 17, or 18, just so you know. Okay, enough about that. Now I'm going to go ahead and revisit the post that I had last Tuesday, talking about some of the things I was going to be looking for or some of the things that the Mids needed to do if they were going to have a chance of winning. And we'll see how close I came with those observations compared to what actually happened in the game. Now, the first thing I said was that the game was shaping up to be another typical slugfest. I mean, the only ones that haven't been in the last, say, 10 years was the 2013 game where the Mids ran all over the Black Knights 34-7. And that was actually the game that resulted in Jeff Monken being hired by Army, because Rich Ellerson was fired right after that game. And then Army's AD went down to Georgia Southern to convince Jeff Monken to take over the job. So that was the first one. And then the other one, of course, was 2 years ago when the Mids won 31-7. But all the others have been, you know, really tight, usually within one or two scores. So I didn't think that this year was going to be all that different. You had the big run by Christian Anderson at the very beginning of the game. I guess it was four plays in, 56 yards. And Army blocked pretty well on that. But Coach Ken mentioned in the post game that the Mids weren't quite set up defensively. And that's what resulted in the big play. But, you know, they made that quick adjustment and Army never saw the end zone again. Now, staying with the defense, the other thing I mentioned on Tuesday was that they had to stay both disciplined and aggressive at the same time. In fact, a couple of times, the guys broadcasting the game, Brad Nessler and Gary Danielson, referenced Coach Newberry saying that their defense had to be ultra aggressive the entire game. And they were. There was a couple of penalties that got them. I mean, ultimately, they didn't hurt. Like, they flagged Diego Fago for hanging onto that guy's leg a little bit too long. But that turned out to be an offsetting penalty, though, because I guess an Army offensive lineman got a little bit irate and ended up stomping on Fago while he was still on the ground. Anyway, when it comes to the whole aggressiveness piece, the things I look at statistically are, you know, I don't think it's rocket science, sacks and tackles for a loss. So for the game, the Mids had one sack and five tackles for a loss as a team. And individually, they were led by Nicholas Straw, who had one of each. Even when that aggressiveness was not targeted in the right direction, all the defenders had each other's back. And later, I'm going to talk about one huge play that could have been a game changer had things gone differently. Now, offensively, last Tuesday, I said that the Mids had to convert every red zone opportunity they had into touchdowns. There was no field goals here, okay? And that's where they really came through. It would have been nice if they would have gotten into the red zone a couple more times, but I don't know that I was really expecting that, you know, given how this game typically goes. So the Mids got into the red zone twice on the first drive of the game and also the first one in the second half, and they scored touchdowns on both of them. Lavatai and the offense converted on some pretty big plays that we'll get into a little bit later. But that was definitely the difference, because Army also got into the red zone on a couple of occasions, but all they could come away with were field goals. And clearly that was the difference in the game. Now, another thing I mentioned last week was that the offense had to stay away from any kind of drive-killing penalties. And they pretty much did that, too. They did have a false start on a 4th-and-4 that backed them up 5 yards. But given where their field position was, I don't know that they were really looking to try and convert on that one anyway. I think they were just trying to pull Army off sides. And luckily, that extra 5 yards didn't hurt them, because Bijan Nichols came in and nailed that 43-yarder to extend the Navy lead to 4 points. So I think the Mids came out fairly clean in the drive-killing penalties category. And the last thing I talked about before the game was regarding the offensive game plan. Knowing that Ty Lavatai is a pretty good passer, I was just kind of curious as to whether or not Coach Ken and also Coach Jasper would open things up a little bit with either, you know, doing some stuff out of the shotgun or the pistol formation. The Mids did come out with that look a couple of years ago, and they were pretty successful although they didn't pass out of it. So that's what I was looking for, to see if they're going to utilize Levitai's arm a little bit to, especially like on the short type of pattern, so to kind of keep the Army defense on their heels a little bit. And there was a reference made to last year's game where both teams were just like going triple option all day long, and it was just like beating your head against the wall. So it didn't surprise me at all to see the mids open up in the pistol. And to be honest with you, I'd have to go back and look at every play, but I'd have to say that the base triple option package was probably used the least number of times when you look at, you know, all of Navy's games throughout the entire year. The mids outgained the Black Knights 196 yards to 124 yards on the ground. But a couple of things to keep in mind. Number one, 56 of those 124 Army rushing yards came on one run from Christian Anderson. And secondly, Navy got a fair amount of their rushing yardage from different formations besides the triple option, like, you know, the pistol or the shotgun, like we talked about before. So that little bit of variety, I think, did kind of help open things up a little bit, because Levitai had a chance to throw the ball, and he looked pretty good, too. I mean, he had, I think all of his completions were double digits, I'm pretty sure. He started off by connecting with Mark Walker on an 18-yarder to keep that first drive of the game going. And then, let's see, he had Cooper on a 28-yarder at some point during the game. And then the next big one was Mikhail Haywood. He had a 24-yard reception. That turned out to be a huge play in that first drive of the second half where the mids took the lead. Levitai showed some nice touch on a screen pass to Chance Warren. That one went for 12 yards, and even though it wasn't quite enough to pick up the first down, I really liked the way it developed. So knowing that you have a quarterback who can make those kinds of finesse throws coming back next year, I think is really, really encouraging for the coaching staff, because I believe that what they'll probably try to do is just kind of figure out ways that they can take advantage of Levitai's arm moving forward. And it's probably too soon to think about this, but the other thing I'm curious about is whether or not the departure of Chance Warren and Carlinos Acey influences the coaching staff at all with respect to where Xavier Arline is used next year. Obviously, he's developing to a solid backup quarterback, but he's a heck of an athlete. And, you know, I'm just wondering if just sliding him in there for a few packages like they were trying to do in the Army game is going to be enough when you got this guy who can pretty much explode at any time and get to the end zone, you know, with the right set of blocks. Okay, we are done with taking a look and seeing how some of my observations before the game compared to what actually happened on the field. This looks like a pretty good spot to take a break. So when we return, we'll go over several of the key plays that made a difference in Saturday's game. Stay with us. All right, we are back here at Navy Sports Central with our breakdown of the mids' big win over Army. And right now, I'd like to take a closer look at a few of the plays that made a big difference in the game, and more importantly, why they ended up in such a good result. The first one we're going to talk about is that reverse to Jay Umbarger that took place on Navy's first possession. It came on a 3rd and 5 from the Army 35, and the big play on that drive was an 18-yard pass from Ty Levitai to Mark Walker, which took the mids into Army territory. So on that particular play, Levitai took the snap and rolled to his right, and basically just dished the ball off to Umbarger coming the other way. And Army was perfectly set up to defend it. Andre Carter was in a position to tackle Umbarger for a significant loss, probably about 4 or 5 yards. And what ended up happening that I could see was that he was really aggressive on his pursuit, and his momentum kind of carried him upfield just a little bit, and it gave Jay Umbarger a chance to cut inside of him. So that's what you saw. He basically just put his foot in the ground and cut inside of Carter, and next thing you know, he was free and running for, I believe it was about a 27-yard gain. But the reason it actually went 27 yards was, when if you look at the replay, you will see that Carlinos Acey engaged his defender about 12 to 13 yards downfield, and he is battling him hand-to-hand all the way down while Umbarger is using that block to continue to pick up more yards. And the interesting thing is, like right towards the end, you can see Acey losing his balance, but he actually ended up falling into another blocker. So he ended up blocking two guys at once while Umbarger was able to get the last of those few yards that got him, I believe, to about the 8-yard line. So it was really, really a terrific play, and just demonstrates again that the slot backs are tenacious blockers, even when they're dealing with guys that are much bigger than them. And that's what made the difference in this particular play. The Mids ended up scoring three plays later on Levitai's quarterback draw. And for my money, this was an extremely important drive, because when you consider the fact that the Mids had been shut out last year, I mean, they got right to that 1-yard line on Arline's big run last year, and they just couldn't punch it into the end zone. For the offense to take the ball right down the field and score on their first drive in this game was absolutely huge. Okay, so that was the first big play. And of course, for the rest of the half, the two defenses pretty much just battled back and forth. Now, Army did get into the red zone a couple of times, but the Mids forced them into kicking two short field goals. I think they were like 31 and 32 yards. So that was pretty huge too, keeping the Black Knights out of the end zone on those two possessions before halftime. That brings us to our second play, which took place on Navy's first drive of the second half. And on that particular possession, they were able to take the ball down inside of Army territory, getting down to the 27-yard line, where they were basically staring at a 4th-and-4. So I thought that Coach Niumatalolo might go ahead and go for the field goal here, but I think he sensed that given the way things were going defensively, he wanted to take advantage of that opportunity. So on that particular play, you had Lavatai taking a snap and heading to his right again, where he handed the ball off to Tiger Goslin. And Goslin left it for Warren, who was coming back to the right. But the play looked like it was just doomed from the beginning, because Army already had a defender in the backfield who was in a pretty good position to at least keep Warren back there. So what ended up happening was that Warren essentially retreated about another 8 or 9 yards back to about the 40-yard line, so that he could get around to the edge. And he did manage to do that. He got the angle on the guy and made it to the sideline. And from there, he just worked his way up. Now, to me, it looked like Warren had already run about 30 yards by the time he got back to the original line of scrimmage. So as he approached the first down marker, Andre Carter, who, by the way, was the same guy that Umbarger beat in the first quarter to get that 27-yard gain, Carter had him in his sights. He had just gotten off of a block from James Harris, and he looked like he was in a perfect position to shove Warren out of bounds. But what ended up happening was that he was just a little bit off balance. And Warren, of course, had a full head of steam. So he just lowered his shoulder and accelerated into Carter, knocking him backwards and continuing upfield. And I think he got all the way down to about the 2-yard line. But if you look really, really closely, you'll see that right when Warren was getting past Carter, there was another player. There's another defensive lineman from Army. His name was Nolan Cockrell. He looked like he could have also gotten a hand on Warren and pushed him out of bounds as well. But there was one Navy player that stopped him from doing that. And believe it or not, that was Ty Lavatai. That play was originally designed to be a pass to the Navy quarterback, but he was covered. So when Warren broke up field, Lavatai got in a position to try and help out with a block. And he just happened to be right in front of Nolan Cockrell when Warren went past him. So he basically put a shoulder into the Army defensive lineman to keep him from getting a hand on Warren and pushing him out of bounds. So that play worked for two reasons. First, Warren is a really talented runner who used his leverage to shed that tackle by a guy who basically outweighed him by 70 pounds. And second, had it not been for Levitai's block on Cockrell, Warren may have been pushed out of bounds at around the 20-yard line. And the Mids would have had a first down for sure, but, you know, who knows what might have happened next. You know, maybe Army figures out a way to stop him. You know, your guess is as good as mine, but I'm just glad we didn't have to find out. So, of course, on the following play, Lavatai takes it in from 2 yards out, and now the Mids have their first lead of the game. From there, Navy just went on to dominate the third quarter. I think at one point they showed a graphic that had the Mids running 30 plays to 8 for Army, and Army had only gained like 12 yards. So that brings us to our third play. And believe it or not, it's not going to be the accidental fake punt that that the Mids pulled off to get that key first down and extend the drive into the fourth quarter. I think that's been looked at pretty much in depth, and I don't really have a whole lot to add to that conversation. So there's another one I think that was as important, maybe even more important, when you consider at what point in the game it came and what was at stake. So let me just go ahead and set it up for you. Army had the ball, and they were looking at a 3rd-and-1 from their own 34. And the Mids have everyone in the box to stop the run. They know it's going to the fullback. They just got to figure out where. And Diego Fago was anticipating that the play was going to go through the A-gap, which is the gap between the center and the guard. So when the ball is snapped, he jumps right into that gap to basically take up that space. But the Army fullback, Jacoby Buchanan, took the ball through the B gap, which is the one between the guard and the tackle. So he breaks through the line of scrimmage, and the only guy standing between him and the goal line is Mikey McMorris. Now, let me give you a little bit more perspective here. Jacoby Buchanan is 6'1", 260 pounds. Mikey McMorris is 5'9", 173. So he's given away nearly 90 pounds here. All right. So the laws of physics are definitely not in his favor. But he did the only thing he could. He went low and he grabbed onto Buchanan's right ankle and just hung on for dear life until John Marshall and I think Nicholas Straw came in to help make the tackle. So that play was so critical. I actually froze it on the DVR right when McMorris made contact. And he actually had to come from the side. So he was never fully in front of Buchanan because he was actually playing to Diego Fago's left when Fago went into that A gap to try and stop the play. So Buchanan was just about past him when McMorris latched onto his foot. There was no one else for him to beat had he been able to run through that tackle. And Buchanan knew it too, because when he got up, he was visibly frustrated. You could see him just stomping his feet and shaking his fist because he knew that if he could have shaken off McMorris, chances are he would have taken it to the house. So all I can say is thank God for Mikey McMorris and his determination, because it was kind of funny. I was listening to the post-game interview and they were asking him about that play. And he said that when he realized that it was just him against Buchanan, you know, a guy that he basically was just no match for physically, he knew what he had to do. And that's why he went down low and just got a hold of that foot and just hung on until his teammates could get there to finish things off. So just an awesome play, potentially game-saving play. And I think that McMorris deserves a ton of credit, along with, of course, the rest of the defense. But it was just an awesome play by him. So there you go. Those were the plays that I thought were the biggest difference makers, in addition to that accidental fake punt, for sure, because that did give Navy a chance to extend the lead by getting that field goal. And that meant Army had to get a touchdown to win. And basically, the way the defense was playing, there was just no way they were going to let that happen. Jake Busick and Fago made sure of that when they stopped Anderson on that 4th-and-3 with about a minute and a half to go. All right, we're going to go ahead and step away for a short break, and I'll be back with a few final thoughts. Okay, we are back on Navy Sports Central. Carl Darden here with you. And before we go, I wanted to just share a few thoughts with you on how things finished up, as well as give you my take on 2022. I think we can agree that it was a tough season, and I figured it would be after I saw the schedule back in the summer. That was not a slate you wanted to be playing coming off a year that was screwed up by a pandemic. And that, along with the quarterback challenges that the Mids faced all of last year, meant that there are a lot of questions that needed to be answered when things kicked off in September. And now that the Army game is in the books, I can tell you that I'm actually feeling pretty good about how things look moving forward. And I'll tell you why. First, Ty Levitai's development at quarterback has just been excellent. And the credit for that goes to him for working so hard, and also to Coach Jasper for basically doing what he does best. And that's developing quarterbacks to run the Navy offense. And then second, the team has some outstanding talent coming back on both sides of the ball next season. Levitai will continue improving his efficiency running the Mids attack, and he'll still have Mark Walker and Jay Umbarger to throw to. And you can also count on guys like Daniel Jones, who's a slot back, to take up the slack now that Chance Warren will be graduating. If you jump over to the defensive side, you got players like freshman Colin Ramos and Tyler Fletcher. They're both linebackers. And then Rayon Lane, who's a safety. All three of those guys got some quality reps during the season against some pretty tough competition. And as they got further into their schedule, they just got sharper and sharper. On top of that, the experience they gained playing Army is going to benefit them as well. And finally, when all the dust had settled, it was actually pretty remarkable how close the team came to scratching out 6 wins with the schedule that they did have to play. They had their chances against SMU. I was at that game. They actually had a chance to tie it 3 times after being up 21-7. And then against East Carolina, they were just one play away from putting that one in the win column. So with the kind of experience they got against some tough competition, I feel pretty good about Navy's chances to get back to a bowl game next year. Oh, yeah. One last thing. Did you guys catch that shade that Diego Fago was throwing Army's way at the post-game press conference? I guess it ticked off a lot of those guys because it was blowing up on Twitter. I mean, you saw the usual fake outrage there. But based on some of the responses to Fago's comments and their attempts to tear him down, I've got to say that if the Army football team likes to refer to themselves as the last of the hard, it doesn't appear to be that way when you're talking about some of the folks in their fan base. And I'll just let it go at that. That's going to do it for this edition of Navy Sports Central. Thank you all so much for joining us. Now, if you like what you've heard, make sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts. And remember to spread the word to all the other Navy fans out there. Now, although we didn't have one today, we have been getting a great response to our question of the day. So if you want to jump in on that, just go to the Navy Sports Nation group Facebook page. The one from our last episode is still up there. And just a quick reminder, the views expressed on Navy Sports Central are my own and do not reflect those of the U.S. Naval Academy or Navy Athletics. By the way, the music used in Navy Sports Central comes to you courtesy of Audio Jungle. This is a great site for purchasing the rights to use music from thousands of artists around the world, and those we feature in the podcast will be credited in our show notes. Talk to you soon, everybody. Until next time, this is Carl Darden. Go Navy, beat Army.